Michael Meets is a podcast interviewing regular people about life, work, their interests and aspirations. Coming up in this week's podcast is the second half of my chat with Martin Flynn from Belfast. Last week, Martin told us about growing up in a house with 12 other children, the teacher he hated, and starting work at the age of 9. If you didn't listen to last week's podcast, I suggest you have a listen now before we go any further. Last week we finished up just when I was offered a cup of tea by Martin's lovely wife. But let's rewind a bit further and hear about Martin getting that job in Kennedy's.
But you know, we're doing the milk when I was younger. I always loved milk or working on a farm or being in a dairy.
Yeah.
And one of the fellas from Turf Law is Reddy Reid, says to me, God, there's an inside job going on thing. Do you fancy no working in Kennedy's? And that was right beside the village then, you see.
Yeah.
But see, when I was a kid, I used to go for my granny and all the old people around St. James's. There was a bridge went across the Blackie River towards Tatesy Avenue. I would always went over there every Friday for the fish and chips, you know, and used to say, oh, here's the wee Fenian come. You know, funny enough, I went there about 3 or 4 years ago, the Beatties in the village. I actually went in there for 3 or 4 years, you know, just to see what it was like to get a fish, and I was actually telling the man inside it about the experience, and he was laughing. He says, Jesus, that's incredible, isn't it? But anyway, so I was in Kennedy's Milk Dairy for, I think I was only in it a week. And we're leaving it one day, me and Dickie, fella from Glenvie, Dickie, God, he died there a few years, I just can't remember his name. And another fella from Lower Andy too, can't remember his name. But I remember we came out of we left that afternoon, I think it was about 3 or 4 o'clock where we were finished. And we were all walking along towards Tates Avenue. We just got across Tates Avenue, looking. I was up north towards French Park Street, and I seen these three boys, you know, standing at the corner. And I looked over towards them. I knew there was something not right. And the next thing, jumped out and says, Fenians, like that there. So I shouted to her to fucking run. So around by this time, your man, one of them had started to fire a shot. These what you call like zip guns, things. So that you pull them just like a pin and a thing.
Yeah.
They fired a shot. The other two boys are way up in front of me. They run. They fired a shot, and I ducked like that there. But when I started to run again, there was one actually behind me. But he was trying to do this here at the back of my head. But however way I grappled with him, the thing went into my arm. The bullet went into my arm and thing. But I had him like that, no, like sort of way grappling him, but fucking didn't he pull away. But see, the other two was long with him, they run away. And then he got up and he got, you know, thing. And that was me, so it was me.
That's
a dare, right. So I got shot, so I run around, I had to run around that way. The two boys were away. I was never the same one of them men that was with me. Never ever spoke to me after, believe it or not.
Right.
I don't know if it was because of the shock of it or what. I would have seen him along the Falls Road. He lived in Lord Anderson's town, the fella. But he became very strange after that. I think it affected him psychologically, to be honest. You know, that fella was never the same after. And I think he's dead now. The two of them said now.
Right.
But I remember going round and going in and blah, 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 and the blood was coming down my arm or something like that there. And I remember a sandry and a Brit sandry and a thing at the Broadway thing. And this Brit run out and said, what, you in something? I says, I just got shot round the corner there, blah, blah, like that there, you know. Oh, next thing they all fucking, the whole squad of them then come out there. Had me then, right, like that there and started, no, oh, you get shot, but no, all this here, asking you questions and stuff like that. Anyway, I was brought to the hospital. They kept me in, was end up, I thought it would just put a bit in and out. They kept me in. The bullet had lodged, the thing of the bullet had lodged in the arm. And I remember there were some soldiers in the ward who were injured. And I remember, see this day, I regret not fucking making a thing about her. There was a head nurse in it. And she says, and where did they get shot and blah, blah, blah. Well, what were you doing there? Like, maybe you shouldn't have been there. And I was going like, what the fuck's this all about? You know what? But anyway, I was in there for about a week. They kept me in for a week anyway, and they took the bullet wound out, and they wouldn't let me out in case there was something with in there or whatever, so they had to keep an eye on that there. But I got out for a week anyway. So it was me going. That was me going out to Kennedy's.
Another job
gone. So I couldn't go back to Kennedy's. Because what happened was, after the time, the cops came in. The cop.
Does that bell want me a cup of tea or coffee?
No, I'm all right, thanks. Honestly,
sure?
Aye, thanks a million.
Right.
All right, thanks.
But I forgot to say about the cops coming in when I was in the hospital. And cop come and says to me, could you give a description, blah, blah. I see your man, I just face as well as I can still see it today. Mm. As well as you, me and you, you know. And he says, would you be prepared? I says, I'll fuck him, I'll kill him, I'll do this, I'll do that. You know, like out there, the cop goes, oh, but you'd be up for murder. I said, hey, fuck, here's me murder. Here's me that scum. See that type of scum? They're the people that have been shooting at the Catholics coming up from them. They see the end in the 70s, there was clothes factories down the Donegal Road. You had places that made suits, you had people that made double coats. There was, you know, there was all the clothes, the rag trade was down the Donegal Road, but there was these huns that were shooting at Catholics all the time. And I says, all right. You just know who's doing all the shooting. He said, well, they're probably the fucking same ones that shot me that were doing all that been doing all the shootings. So he says to me, right, I'll tell you what, well, if we pick them up and find out who they are, will you go and identify them? I says, aye, not a problem. He says, especially down the gun one. I says, I'll see when I'm home and then I says to myself, fuck, I don't think I would. And I wasn't going to. But then my future mother-in-law, Mrs. Shannon, says to me, Martin, go down, because they're the ones that saw it, they're doing the shooting, so go down, no one. And I had to go to Donegal Pass Police Station, fucked in the middle of them. So anyway, I got brought down, somebody brought me down to Donegal Pass Police Station, and I remember getting brought into a room, and the cop was there, and he says, right, we've picked up such and such a body, didn't mention his name, just says, I want you to go in and do a shot now, and I want you to walk up two or three times, and if you see the person that shot you, put your hands on him. Well, this is honestly right. Seen you open the door, and I seen him. I jumped him on and grabbed him. He says, you can't do that. He threw the phone me off. He says, no, you can't do that. I went, I knew him straight away. But there's better story to come off this. I knew him straight away, so. And I jumped on him. So they pulled me off, and they said to me, now look, listen, we need to do this right. I need you to go out there, try and hold your anger back, go out there, go up and down the lane two or three times, right? And all I want you to do is just put your hand on top of his, tap him on the shoulder, like that there. He says, and leave the rest to us, right? So the second time I went out, and that's what I'd done. And your mom said, I didn't think you'd have the balls to pick me out. This is in the cop station, right? So I picked him out, right? So I left. I hadn't heard anything for yonks and yonks and yonks. But later I found out the fella that shot me, you called him Smith. Yeah. And he had a brother called Hatcher Smith, and they were top UDA men in the village. They used to live in Ballymurphy. Their granny lived around the corner in Rodney Drive, who was a Finnegan. His two uncles were in jail for the provost, doing time. I worked with his dad down doing sheeting in Newry. That was another wee job I got after thing.
Kennedy's?
No, after Kennedy's. I ended up working with his dad, and this is after he shot me, down in a sheeting place, down in thing, and I didn't realise this.
Yeah.
And, though he wasn't working for, he wasn't doing the sheeting, he was like a felter, but he was working for that same firm. They were over in the village, so the firm was over in the village, but I never went into the village. I worked for a man called, after Kennedy's, after the shooting thing, I worked for, what do you call it, H&J Martin's, or like a, after the shooting. See, after the shooting, and I got a bit of a claim, I got 500, that's when he ended up getting more out to market anyway. I got £500 out of it.
Right.
I lost my job. Could have lost my life, and that's what I got for that £500. So I couldn't go back to that place again. But see, years ago, I never thought that I'd ever live till I'm 64. Aye. Never. Like, see, during the Troubles, like at the start, that's the start of the Troubles. Oh, things that happened to my family, my friends, my brother-in-law, Francie, only married 6 weeks, not long after me. Shot dead, bride in Milltown Cemetery, you know. My sister-in-law, she remarried again, that was my first wife's sister. Yeah. You know, things like that. All the different things went through, all the people I've seen going to jail, all the people I've seen coming out of jail, the heartache, the pain of the people, the suffering of my own people. Yeah. It was hard, you know.
And did that change, like, see, you thought you weren't going to live to 64, did that change how you lived your life?
I was always, believe it or not, I was always up for stuff. Like, you know, see, I'll tell you the truth. I remember the very first night of the Troubles, right? And I was going with a girl. This is before I ever met my first wife. I was going with a girl in Great George's Street, right? You call her Tres McVeigh. God rest her, she's dead now. She died of cancer. Right? And I remember coming through the town that night when the first night of the Troubles had started. And I remember coming up towards Barrack Street. No, first of all, I remember the cops and the specials round St Mary's Chapel, because I would have came along Royal Avenue and come round that way there. But I didn't realise how bad the Troubles was that night until I really got round and into it. And I got till I was coming up John Street, Hamill Street, that way there, and it was all closed off, and you could see all the patrol bombs and you could hear the shooting and all that there the very first night, 1968. And I remember getting up, and this B-man was saying, where are you going? I says, what do you mean, where am I going? The reason I knew Harry was a B-man, he had a round tunic. Like that, the cops had the thing, tunic. He had like a round tunic, round black tunic, like that there. Special constabulary, anyway, that's what they called them, these specials. But anyway, and I says, I'm going up the road. He says, oh, you're not going up this fucking road tonight. There's nobody going up that fucking road, like that there. But there was a fella stopped beside me, believe it or not, and he was shot dead in later years as an informer. Mm-hmm. Called McKernan, the Monkey McKernan, that was his nickname. And he was starting there for me. At that time, I was working in the bar in Union Street, and his pop would have been drinking. The family would have drank in the bar. And he was talking about, we were talking away, and he says, look, you'd be better, you'd be well coming back and staying with me in Unity Flats. So I went back to Unity Flats, but it was his bar, because the mobs were trying to get down the Shangle too. They attacked Unity Flats, so we were up all night, and there was pickaxe handles and stuff like that. That's a thing, you know. So the next morning, got up, we were up. I must have fell asleep in his flat, maybe about 5 o'clock or 6 in the morning, and daylight started to come. And by the time I woke up, it was probably about 8 o'clock, or near 9. And I remember walking from his thing in Unity Flats across Millfield and up the falls. And when I was walking up the falls, the fucking smoke was bellowing out of everywhere. It was like as if it was the Second World War, and we see the war pictures with buildings all pulled down and stuff like that there. It was just like a total war scene. Just unbelievable. I never experienced anything like it in my life. And my mum and all, they were all worried, but when I got up home here, and then I started to tell them what had happened and stuff like that there. And my mum was devastated. She says, God, we thought you were killed and know all this here. Anyway, my eldest brother lived in England at the time, and I had actually phoned him, and he came fucking home. He's just flew home straight away. The other brother, he was in Australia. He was never for coming back. He's still away this day. But he comes home on a holiday, but he wouldn't have been out. Maybe would have been like an out and out. He would always had a bit of republicanism in him, so he did. So along with my gran, he would have been very close to my granny Welsh too. So he came home, and then everything progressed. During the Troubles, you had all the citizen defence, and then you were going on lorries and helping people out of homes and down Rathcoole and different other places. My aunt, we had to go and sort of help her out. She was getting burned out. She got burned out over in Finnegan, Tadmona. That's my dad's sister and stuff like that there. And then all the turmoil. And then you seen all these wee shacks, wooden things, you know, wee wooden huts, places where to put refugees and people in. They were going into schools and stuff like that there. But that all had a dramatic effect on people, you know, like to myself, and people that felt that way towards your own people. And being a Republican, you sort of way, I always had wee Republican inclinations in my head. I was always involved in something or doing something. But that really hurt me, as a matter of fact. And I remember coming in the house that morning when I seen what happened down the floor, and I was crying.
Mm.
I was absolutely crying. I couldn't believe the people and what the people had went through. So I couldn't.
Yeah.
And from that day on to this, I've been a hard and bitter Republican ever since. And I'm not going to stop now.
Yeah. While Belfast is this island's second largest city, it is still small enough to meet people unexpectedly while out and about in the city centre. I'll let Martin tell you about an unexpected encounter he had at Smithfield Market.
I remember when old Smithfield was still there, right? Mm. And this was long after this had taken place. And I was in the old bookshop because I liked old Republican books and stuff like that. So I went looking for wee bits and scraps of books and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I remember being in this bookstore and thing, and I looked across and he was there. But the boy himself.
The man that chat you?
The man that shot me. And I fucking ran out there lovely. But the next thing is out the door. And I'm about like book after him up Wayne Tavern Street. No, like a shot. But fucking there he was, away up in the shangle.
Yeah.
Gone. But you know, the it's strange. It's when I heard so much about that family and the uncles being in, and I was going to myself, but you know what? It never see. Even though they were mixed marriage or Protestant, whatever they were, right?
Mm.
Like see me. I remember Freddie Crawford, who I done the sticks and the paraffin and the fruit and all. And Freddie came from the village, but totally opposite type of person. Lovely man, you know. Mm. Just and to this day, there wouldn't be one bit of bigotry in my. See my kids. My kids follow Sally and all that, but I've told them, you know, no bigotry here. No. I wouldn't bring my kids up, not one of my kids up to be a bigot. One of my whole family's the same. Or Juggie Smith through them all, disfigured through the troubles. Mickey's been in jail. Dirty's been in Armagh jail. You know, my dad was lifted. My dad was McGilligan, the Maidstone, Long Case. My dad was never in the IRA.
Mm.
You know, and stuff like that there. But we've never held grudges. We're not bigots. We're proud Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when I was going to do that religious thing, you know, I was still a proud Republican, though some Republicans thought I wasn't. But they had to deal with it, not me. I was dealing with my inner self and the way I needed to get myself right.
After his first marriage broke up, Martin found himself at a loose end and wanted to get his life back on track. He turned to religion, and after visiting a shrine to Our Lady at Mount Melry, County Waterford, helped solidify religion as a major focus in his life.
And then somebody said something about going to Melry one time, right? Mm. Someone down to Melry. And as I thought, this is my life, it's changing, and I'm dying. I'm trying to get myself on the right track again.
Yeah.
But anyway, I comes back from Melry and my life had changed. I started getting involved in prayer groups and charismatic movement and stuff like that, which I enjoyed. I really enjoyed it. I didn't care what people thought about me or anything else. It was like, as if I was floating in heaven, as if this new thing had happened to me and I was flying. Mm. Somebody says reborn or whatever it is. But it was great.
Yeah.
And you know, I said to my mum, you know, I've never felt this great in my life. This is absolutely fantastic. But I remember going down to Mass in Clannard Monastery.
Yeah.
One Sunday morning, it was probably the first time I'd been to Clannard in fucking years, because see, when we were younger, my dad would have sent us the confraternity. See, then that was a big thing in the men's confraternity, but there was a boys section too, and they would have sent it. But I hadn't been to Clannard in years when I was a kid. Because I remember years ago, we had an alt down here in the house. Everybody done the rosary. It's the same with my grannies. Mm. They done the rosary. I remember even laying in the bed with my granny, you know, when I was younger and all, and she had the prayer book, and all, she had about 50 or 60 prayers. And all these different prayers to say. But I remember anyway, getting into Clannard Monastery and kneeling down, and I was praying away. I was praying for everybody, praying for myself and my brothers and my sisters, all the prisoners, you know, Republicans. I was actually even praying for peace, believe it or not, you know, all that there. And that was then. I sort of was, and the next thing I felt this tap on the shoulder, I'll never forget, it was 9 o'clock Mass. And I looked up and Margaret Dargley's standing over me. And I didn't know where enough he went to mass in it. Yeah. Margaret told, and she tapped me on the shoulder. I got there and I looked up and I go on. And the tears just come flying out of my eyes. And she started to roar. And she says, my prayers have been answered. And I said, what do you mean? She says, I've been praying my prayers to say to you, but you're going there. I've been praying for you for years to go back to church. She says, my prayers have been answered. That's just what she just says to me.
Yeah.
And I was so unbelievable. And she just threw her arms around me. Just nothing. The tears just flying out of me. I just couldn't believe it. You know, this is Kieran Dagley's mum, the Hunger Striker's mum, actually embraced me and putting her arms around me, you know. And Big Alfie was the same. Yeah. I'm proud of you, son. I'm proud of me for a while. Come back now. Do you know? I thought I'd won something there. Do you know? It was just one of them things that, I don't know about how to put it into words. It was just so special.
It's kind of life, it was just,
you know, I heard all these other people saying, oh, he's a head case, he's went off the rails and all this here. Mm. You know, like, I hadn't gone off the rails at all. It was just something that happened in my life that I just needed this bit of thing to help me to get myself back on track again. And that lasted for a lot of years. Like, I'm in the prayer groups and all. I run bus runs myself to Mallory and also I did too. And do you know what? I don't regret one bit of it. You know, where people turn around and say, oh, he was a head case, this, that, and the other one thing, he went over the top and all that there. Yeah. I didn't see that there. I needed that there for to get me to where I am today.
Yeah, it was right for you.
It was right for me at that time. Because I needed it, you know. But what I used to look at, I used to see these people, know someone, and well, they're in good Republicans, they didn't criticise, you know. And the next thing I used to see the Amazon mass, you know. Like, mm-hmm. And there was one fella, like I remember this one fella, personal friend of mine, well, a lot, and never ever once did he ever turn it, but he hated the church. But you know what? See at his funeral, I'll tell you his name now, Harry Burns, and see at his funeral. You want to see all the people who was in that mass. You know, and there were some of the people who had laughed at me and blah, blah, blah. Harry was up there, his coffin was up there in front of St. John's Chapel, and see the amount of people who was in that there. But no, the funny thing about Harry was Harry became best of friends because he had cancer with a soldier.
Right.
And the two of them became the best of friends. Harry, at the time, I remember Harry wouldn't put his foot inside the church. And there was Harry. Got the last right to church, you know, the full blast in the church and or buried in Milltown, you know.
Mm.
And I says, and look what he done, and look at the people he brought into the chapel.
Yeah.
And you know, some of them raised it, and I laughed, you know. I don't know whether I just went in because it was Harry or whatever, but the very fact that they stepped inside the church, because a lot of them I knew in the turn around, oh, I'd never go into a church, and I wouldn't do this, and I wouldn't do that, you know. And you know, and I was sometimes I was fearsome with time because I would have been like pro. I would have been very pro-life, very anti-abortion. Well, it would still be anti-abortion to tell you the truth, but I would have been in people's faces. And probably wasn't the right thing to do with people either.
Yeah,
like I remember tagging, you know, abusing some of the Sinn Féin people, and again I was involved in Sinn Féin myself, and I would have got very, very, very angry about all that there. But then as time going on, then I started to mellow and get back into my own routine, get married and had my own kids.
Martin, can I ask you about the religion thing again, right? Because you haven't said it, but I think this is what you've taught me, is that, you went through a phase where you were very religious and it really helped you and it was important to you to where you were at that time.
Yeah.
Did that change or did it mellowed?
Oh, it's mellowed, obviously, yeah. I mean, apparently you just can't live in the high all the time.
Mm.
I'd still be religious, like, I carry my rosy beads with me and stuff like that there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I go to mass every Sunday or thing. I generally try and pray. I would even just be walking along the street or I was out driving. I'd just go and have a prayer. If I feel like calling the clannard, I would call in the clannard.
Yeah.
I used to go to the wee adoration chapel. The funny thing about the adoration chapel is when I was going through all this here, and I remember sitting in the adoration chapel, and there's a couple of wee nuns down there. I remember sitting in the adoration chapel and there was writing outside, and I had this thing about the Blessed Sacrament, which I like myself. I'm telling you as it is, the way I thought at the time. And I looked into stuff and I said, hey, Jesus, do you remember when I was like that? I don't know, the kids, you could hear them rat. Do you remember all that there? And then, just some laughs. And I used to laugh at that. I used to laugh in myself about it too, you know. Like I was like that, Lord, like I was like that there, like the same as him was out there and all that there. And then I remember coming up to Christmas one time. I hadn't been with anybody. I was living on my own here at the time. It was before I married Liz. The first marriage I broke up, as I was saying. And I was in the Adoration Convent. And I happened to say to a wee nun one night, "Sister, do you know what? See, Christmas Eve. You just have to, obviously, you have to sit up here, don't you?" And they did. Some of them would have had to stay up with a glass of cigarette. I said, "You know what? I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that." You know, no. She says, "Well, do you want to?" And I says, "I'd really love to." And I'd done a few Christmases like that there.
Right.
But you know when I'd done it? See, the first Christmas I'd done it, and I was sitting there, you know, front of a glass of cigarette. I always try to keep myself away, but, you know, 9 times out of 10, you always, you kind of dozed her off, but you were there, like, "Sorry, Lord, but I feel like going to sleep here." You know, but I looked at me and I said to him, "Do you know what, Lord, I'll tell you this here. I never thought I'd ever be sitting here at your birthday, you know, no thing." I said, "Well, this is my birthday present, tell you, for all the things that I've done." No, well, that's the way I spoke, you know. Just
honestly, and from the heart, like.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I really love. See, the couple of Christmases that I'd done that there, it was class. I used to say, "God, what a Christmas present."
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I had to get up 6 o'clock when it was finished, and then I went up to Clonard the next morning for the early Christmas mass.
Yeah.
The next morning.
If God walked in this sitting room now, and I wasn't here, what would you say to him? Or her?
I think I'd just I'd melt, to be honest, you know. In reality, I'd melt, you know. I don't know what I'd do, to be honest.
Yeah.
I just don't know what I'd do. But, you know, that's part of my life. That's stuff that I had to go through and stuff that I had to do. And I had to deal with people over that there, you know, because people used to think I was off my rocker.
Yeah.
I was far from off my rocker.
Uh-huh.
I was just having such a good time. I just felt brilliant. Like, see, if you'd have said, like, "You're an angel floating on wings," that's just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
I used to get up every morning. It was great. Every day was brilliant.
I came away thinking that's a great example of when things, be it people or religion, that come into your life for a time when you need them and help you through life's challenges. I asked Martin, would he change anything?
If I hadn't done what I'd done then and all the things that I went through, I wouldn't be the person that I am today.
Mm.
You know, because I love my community, I care for people.
Mm-hmm.
I love the downtrodden. I would go out of my way to help. See, if anybody asked me to help them, I would go out of my way to help them. That's the type of person I am, because I never forget the way I was brought up.
Yeah.
And what I had to do to get where I was.
Yeah.
You know, today. You know, and see if anybody had ever. I never thought, looking back 40 years of the troubles here even then, I never thought that I'd lived to see the day that, you know, that at this age.
I asked Martin what his wish for the future would be, and what if his great-great-grandchildren came across this interview in 60 years' time, what would his message be for them?
I hope in that time Ireland will be free. I really do. And the way I feel today is, I don't think that anybody has to die for united Ireland. I believe it can come about peaceful means. Because time's on our side, time's on the Republican side, time's on the Irish people's side. So, and I don't think one more person should die. And I hope in years to come that my grandchildren and their children don't have to be involved in anything that has to bring about united Ireland through violence.
Mm.
I'm not saying that I was totally against violence.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is things happen, it's gone. To me, it's all the one road now, it's all politics and peace.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be. You know, I wouldn't want one of my grandchildren, or anybody's grandchildren for that matter, or any child in the future, have to go through what the people went through the last 40 years. Because see, if the provisional IRA, with all the weapons and all the people and all the manpower and all the knowledge that they had, couldn't beat the British Army, and the British Army couldn't beat demons, by the way.
Mm.
They fought them to a standstill. Well, who else is going to do it? Because I don't think anybody out there is going to do it. Nobody's going to beat them.
And what's the best piece of life advice you'd give them?
And go out and enjoy it. And do whatever you want to do. If you want to travel, travel. If you want to go away, go away. Go around and see a bit of the world and come back again, and then you can look and see. Like, I mean, I was away a few times during the Troubles. I worked in Holland. I was in America. I talked in America different times up in Albany, talking about here, about justice. I was talking in Harvard University. I talked down in Washington. I talked in Pittsburgh. Mm. You know, I've seen the other side of it. And people wanted me to live in America. America wasn't my scene. I'm a homer. I'm for family. I'm for country. You know, yeah. But see, at the end of the day, but people should go out and spread their wings and go out and see how the other half lives and then come back and enjoy or set yourself down. But live life to the full.
Many thanks to Martin for sharing his story and being so open, reflective and honest. It was a pleasure to sit and listen to him firsthand. I could have easily sat there for another few hours listening about the events and people that shaped the man that sat before me. You can join the conversation over on Facebook, facebook.com/Michael Meets, facebook.com/Michael Meets. For those of you who tweet, I'm over at Michael Meets, at Michael Meets. Do you know someone I should meet? If so, drop me an email, hello@michaelmeets.com, hello@michaelmeets.com. This week's podcast is supported by Gerard O'Donnell Photography. You can check out some amazing work on his website, www.gerardodonnell.ie. GerardO'Donnell.ie or on Facebook, facebook.com/GerardO'Donnell Photography, facebook.com/GerardO'Donnell Photography. He has some great scenic pictures of Ireland and some fantastic portraits of its citizens. Michael Meets is available on iTunes, Audioboom, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcast by searching Michael Meets. Many thanks for all your encouraging messages, comments, and tweets, and the hundreds of you who download the podcast each week. I truly believe we all have great stories to tell, and I want to help share those with you.